The Mystery of the Lost Lenore, Part 10. Swamp lore may be an interesting thing to read when one is seated in a comfortable chair in one's club, a steaming cup of postum resting next to one's elbow, the sound of clubmates gently snoring and wheezing in the background, the knowledge lodged firmly in one's noggin that on returning home that evening a tantalizing new peach and vanilla bath mixture sits ready by the tub. It may be. I cannot definitely say, but I can say this. The unsettling stories that make up most swamp lore are not the things to be contemplated at night in the pitch black of an actual swamp. Earlier that afternoon, as we had waited on the edge of the swamp for Hobie to make his way down the mountain, Sammy, the now local guide originally from Fannistel, had told me a few such stories about the swamp through which we were now slogging. I was not pleased. Apparently this moistened lump of reeds and vines and trees and such was known locally as the Great Swamp. I surmised that this was due to its size, as I could see no other reason for the epithet great. According to Sammy, it was not visited often by the natives, as they had no desire to be devoured by any of the horrible creatures rumored to abide there. Amongst these, the swamp harridan was supposed to be the most frightening and unpleasant. The harridan was believed to be some variety of witch, but a witch so unpleasant that she was shunned by all the other witches, and as a result had gone to live in the swamp. There she survived by eating the eyes of crocodiles. This seemed rather wasteful to me. I imagined her discarding the nearly complete carcasses of these great beasts, having just plucked out her desired meal stuffs. Sammy, however, pointed out that the locals believed that the proof of the harridan's existence lay in the fact that they sometimes came across blind crocodiles who had mistakenly wandered out of the swamp in their confusion. Although I was to some extent gladdened, is that really the word I want, to learn that she was not conducting some wholesale slaughter of amphibians, the blinding of large numbers of these beasts seemed brutal, to say the least. When Sammy told me the story, in the bright sunshine of the afternoon, poised on the edge of the swamp, I did not take it totally seriously. It seemed a vaguely misogynistic tale, cooked up to explain the existence of blind reptiles. There was probably a perfectly rational and scientific explanation for the saurian eye-poking, but no doubt the locals found this myth a little more fun. It was certainly colorful. But as we sloshed through the dark jungle, surrounded by those weird howls and cries, I began to feel that the story, while not really plausible, perhaps touched on the edges of some genuinely evil presence that was lurking there, out of sight, watching us.